Sometimes in life we just suffer. Sometimes it's from being totally withdrawn, or so much stress that we are totally anxious, or so tired that we are totally burnt out. But our current position is not our final destination. No, indeed. There's hope. So whether it's your personal life, your career, your relationship, your business, or your job, we say there's reason to believe again. And we present from Andy's Personal Development, the Breakout Room. It's the place for health, happiness, and prosperity. Stay tuned for more.
And we are continuing to build and develop this community as we prepare people to accept the reality of health, happiness, and prosperity. And today, our guest is going to help us to deal with some of those issues. This episode is entitled Ancient Wisdom Solves Most Modern Issues with Mike Hancock. And I'm telling you, this guy is a handful. So let me just give you a brief introduction on the gentleman who will be our guest in a moment. He's the chairman of the Circle of Excellence Group, one of only 40 speakers in over 55,000 globally to be recognized with the designation of Certified Speaking Professional Global. He's currently the vice president of the Global Speakers Federation, author of 14 books with 7 international bestsellers and 6 by Amazon, number one on business and personal development. As a musician with 13 albums to his name, he had a number one on iTunes in 2013. We're going to find out a bit about that. He's on the board of 3 charities and social causes, and Mike was mentioned by President Clinton for his work alongside the Sage Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. Hey, that's a lot of introduction, but then the guy is here. So let us ask him about himself, his legacy, and his work. Let's welcome Mike Hancock.
Hi, Andy. How are you? Hello, everyone.
Wonderful to have you, Mike, on this beautiful day. And it's so good to be with you live here in the Breakout Room. Mike, here's the thing. I want to start by asking you a question that you may have to do some soul searching, but that's quite all right. In the sense that when you think about your legacy, being a man of many competence, a man of many talents, what is the one thing that you want to stand out the most about Mike Hancock that people will always remember and almost never forget?
Oh, that's a very simple question for me, Andy. It's literally that I helped conscious leaders to play a bigger game than they ever believed possible.
Wow. I love that. It's simple, it's straightforward, but yet it's powerful. I appreciate that, Mike. So where did you grow up as a young man, and what was your childhood like with regards to the foundation that was set so that you have now achieved all the things that you have achieved and accomplished as a leader?
Well, my childhood, I was born in Melbourne, Australia. I haven't lived in Australia for most of my life. Uh-huh. I was an only child to a solo parent, my mother. No grandparents, no great-grandparents, no brothers, no sisters, no aunties, no uncles. And my mother and father got divorced when I was 5 or 6 years old. He was not in a good place in his life at that stage and never returned from that place during this lifetime anyway. And I came home at 15 years old and found my mother dead of a heart attack. So I had literally nowhere to go. All of her friends went, "When you get back on your feet, Mike, come and call us and we'd love to see you." Imagine saying that to a 15-year-old. Yeah. And so I was very lucky in that my best friend's parents took me in. So I finished my last 2 years of high school living with my best friend. And then the day I got my high school graduation, his father came in and said, "Did you pass?" I said, "Yes." He said, we've done all that we can, be out in 2 weeks. So then basically I had to get a job and I had to find my way in the world. And so that led me on one journey or another until I end up with the magnificent Andy Charles in the breakout room.
Wonderful. I love it. I love it. So when we speak about ancient wisdom, Mike, and I thank you for sharing that simple and passionate story. It speaks a lot to the way you have accomplished and achieved stuff from very humble and trying beginnings. But when you speak about ancient wisdom, Mike, what exactly are we referring to? Give us some details.
Okay, that's a very good question, which nobody ever asks, Andy. So there are some amazing, such amazing wisdom came from the very old cultures of the world. And whether those cultures were from the Indus Valley, whether they were from Egypt, whether they were from Africa, Sumeria, the Mayan cultures, the Incan cultures, the Aztecs, the Mongolian nomads, or in the Caucasus Mountains, all of those tribes and people lived very differently than we do today. I mean, most people think that we live the longest of any cultures that have ever lived. That's not true. You know, you only got to read a Bible to read about these people that lived long and healthful lives. Yeah. You only got to go to many of the ancient sites to see that they didn't have walls around their cities. Walls came later. So there was the conflict that we experience today and that has been experienced through the Middle Ages wasn't there in ancient times, and they left great bodies of work. You know, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Corpus Hermetica, the Bible, the Quran. There's so many of these works that are out there. You know, the spiritual wisdom, the I Ching, which is probably the greatest book ever written. It's 5,000 years old, thereabouts. So, and that's a book that when the emperor at the time in China, Fu He, decided that we were just a microcosm of the macrocosm of the world. So he sent his scholars, not academics, because the literal word of root word of academic is trivia. Scholar means observer. So he sent his scholar all around the world at the time, the known world, to simply observe. I mean, they didn't have Netflix. They didn't have the Wi-Fi. So they went and looked at the way a flower grew. They looked at the way a river ran. They looked at the way a cloud moved. And they came up with this body of work, which these days is known as the I Ching. Was nearly destroyed during Mao Zedong's time, but luckily books survived of that, and it came to the West as well. In fact, Carl Jung brought it to the West around about 100 years ago, and it became the basis for all his work on personality types. So if you've ever done a Myers-Briggs profile or a DISC profile or something like that, it's based on 5,000-year-old technology.
Yeah, wonderful, amazing. And how can we apply that kind of ancient wisdom to modern day issues? I mean, you went through the whole plethora of those ancient civilizations, some that we can't forget because of the indelible impact that they have made upon modern society. But what can we take from them and bring into our current situation that would help us? Because even though it's ancient, it was foundational, and it came from a place of reality, and that is what we seem to be lacking or missing in the world today. How can we adapt, and what can we use from those times that would help us now in our current scenario, Mike?
Wonderful question again, Andy. So there is a literal plethora of wonderful ancient wisdom. So I'm just going to focus on a couple. So I'll go back to the I Ching. The I Ching has five elements: water, wood, fire, earth, and metal. And I think the true answer to your question is each person has to seek, if they wish to, their wisdom from the past and apply it to their life. But I want to give a couple of things just to show you how simple this is. Those five elements, the most powerful of those is water. Okay. And water is the money element. So if any of your listeners would like to have more money in their lives, they need to study water. So how does that work? What do I mean? Well, in the English language, there are dozens and dozens of words that relate to money that come from water. We go to the bank, we have currency, we go into liquidation, we have cash flow. They're all water-based. Water was the first currency, and after that came salt. That's saline. That's why we work and get a salary. So that root of that word comes from salt, and previous to that is water. So therefore, if you hoard your money, if you just dam up your money, there's no flow. You're not allowing the cash to flow. So people who are hoarders will generally not live a life of abundance. They'll live a life of fear. When there is flow in life, it's not always smooth. If you look at the roughest water, the fastest river, the tsunamis and the fastest river, it's often quite rough. So when people say, I'm going to make millions of dollars, it's a ride, okay? It's not going to be just smooth and simple. You've got to be prepared for all of the roughage that you would be if you were feeling this wild river or something along those lines. So if you want to grow something, if you want to grow business, study wood. Look at a tree. You can't build a business if you don't have solid roots and a foundation, or your business will fall over. You have to feed that. But you don't have to feed it with much. You have to give it three things: sunlight, water, and good earth. So your business needs three streams of marketing to help it grow. I mean, it's the most logical stuff that was just the genius in this. And when it comes to health, Andy, I mean, I have a very good friend of mine, Don Coleman, who's taught this. He's 76. He's taught this for over 60 years and been chased by all sorts of people who didn't want him to teach this, which is really just about the wisdom of the ancients in whole foods. I mean, a carrot looks, if you cut a carrot, it looks like an eye. Guess what? Carrots are good for your sight. If yes. You look at an avocado, it has a swollen seed inside it. It takes 9 months to ripen, and it looks like the womb of a pregnant woman. Guess what pregnant women should be eating? So it's this type of simple wisdom that comes from people thousands and thousands of years ago that we just ignore today because we think that we're... So I always have a question for people. If the internet is so good and everything we have is so good now, why aren't we all much more rich and much more successful than the great companies?
Yeah.
And most of us are just live ordinary lives like they did. We might have a few more things that make it easy. Vacuum in a refrigerator, maybe, but the rest of it is pretty superfluous. We work harder than most of them. They went to work from 9 till 5 and went home. A lot of people I know working 80, 100 hours a week. So who's the smart ones?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you speak about that, I have to go down this line. I'm thinking about AI. And I have some people that came on the program, Mike, and they were speaking about the advantages and the disadvantages of AI. And the one question I keep asking, and I haven't gotten a proper answer to as yet, is why are we so afraid of something that we created for ourselves? And how do we find a way to mirror the good part that we hold within us as valuable human beings, rather than the ugliness that seems to be pervading out of the use, in some cases, of AI? How do we bridge the gap between the two? Because you are speaking about ancient wisdom and using the powers of the beauty of nature, the water, the soil, and all these other things that we hold dear and precious, but not maybe enough. So then, when it comes to AI, how do we bridge that gap? And how do we understand more of what we give from ourselves as being good is much more important than the technology that we produce ourselves?
I think it's a very good question. I love your questions, by the way. I mean, the quality of your life comes down to the quality of your questions, and you are really good with your questions. So my heartfelt congratulations to you, Andy. It's great. What triggered in me when you asked the question is a couple of things. Firstly, we are just in a new Bronze Age. When we go forward 3,000 years from now, whatever they call this age, let's call it the AI age.
Yeah.
It's no different than when we went to school and we studied the Bronze Age. So what does that mean? It means in the Bronze Age, they discovered how to make and craft metal. So they were able to do magnificent things with it. They were able to create sturdiness for homes and wheels for carts, and they were able to create cups and goblets that didn't break as you transported them. But they also created the sword, and that sword did a lot of damage and killed a lot of people over many hundreds or more than thousands of years, really. So AI is exactly the same. So we're scared of it because our inherent humanness and our DNA memory remembers things like the Bronze Age. And we go, we can't control this, because once you found the secret, how to turn these minerals from the earth into a sword. And by the way, if you take the word sword and take the S off the front and put it on the end, you have words. Because we've killed more people with our words than we have with the sword. But once you actually understand that at a DNA level, that's why you're scared of AI. But the other side of that is AI for many of us is going to be no more disastrous than when they told us we were going to lose our mind and have a calculator at school. My wife, Landy, told me that one when AI first came in. She said, yeah, they said that about the calculator at school, but they said we were going to end up all brainless and stupid, but we aren't. So I think it's going to be the same thing. AI is not going to take from us. It's going to give to us, but it's a dangerous weapon in the wrong hands, and that's something that will just play out. But AI will be superseded, as has been computers superseded by AI, and as has everything else in history being superseded by the next thing.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. Thank you very much for that insightful answer. I appreciate that, Mike. I want to look at your writings for a moment. And I am really impressed by, I'm looking at Ancestry, KV55, and Truth Seekers. I'm going to just put something up on the screen, and I want you to do some color commentary with regards to what I'm going to show you now. Here we go. Tell us about this.
Just waiting for it to load. Okay. So during COVID, I decided, because I'd written a number of nonfiction books, as you mentioned in your introduction, I decided I would write some fiction books. Truth Seekers is the first one, KV55 is the second, Ancestry is the third. Firstly, why did I write them and what are they about? Well, I wrote them because I wanted to introduce different ancient wisdoms and concepts about the way the world really works to people who would never go to a professional development event, who would never seek that type of information out on podcasts, and who in their life is just oblivious to what's going on around them. And I wanted to trigger some of those people to investigate and go, is what he's writing about here actually based on any truth and reality? So Truth Seekers is about the Templar Knights, and it's the same protagonist, the same two characters in all three books, but the Truth Seekers is about the Templar Knights. That's about the way they created the banking system. It's about what they brought to the world, and it's also about who controls the world today and how the world really works. And I had I've got a fascinating part in that book, which I always thought in my mind, this is what happens. So I could never really talk about it. So I put it in the book. And then KV55 is about the secret to longevity, and it's about the Pharaoh Akhenaten. KV55 is the name of the tomb that he's apparently buried in. But I don't believe he's buried there. But if you look at Wikipedia, that's what they'll say. And Ancestry came from Landy, my wife, and I being in England a few years ago, just before the pandemic, and we'd done our DNA tests, and her ancestry goes back to Sami Eskimos, Laplanders, but my ancestry is Viking and British. And so as we were going and looking at some of the places that my ancestors lived, you know, hundreds, and we got back right to 1,000 years ago, I said to her, what if when we gave that DNA sample to find our ancestors, what if that DNA sample they used not to give us the help that we thought we'd need, but to see who has the healthiest gene pool? And what if it's in order to create the Fourth Reich? What if the Third Reich didn't disappear with the Nazis? What if the Fourth Reich's rising and they're testing every human being through DNA testing and they own the companies that do it? So that's what that book's about. So there's lots of different scatterings of ancient wisdom in there. There's things about the Hopi Indians in the first book. There's the Minoans as well. There's the Egyptians. There's some of the things that the Sumerians had, which is in the ancestry book, that the Germans were, you know, that Hitler and Himmler were absolutely obsessed by finding this. And it's very fascinating to me, Andy, that when the first Iraq war came and that the Americans went into Iraq and also looking for weapons of mass destruction, what they did take were all of the historical documents and artifacts from the museums in Iraq, which took thousands of years, but they've never been returned to the Iraqi people and they've not disappeared. And there's a lot of deep, deep ancient wisdom in there. And I think, and I really feel that there are people who want to study that and find out what are some of these technologies that these ancients had that we just don't think that they had. For instance, we're off to Egypt next week. For me, my ninth trip, I think, to Egypt next week. And I read a wonderful book many years ago by a British engineer called Christopher Dunn, which is called The Giza Power Plant. And in it, he puts forward a very, very good case of how the Great Pyramid of Giza was actually an electrical power plant in ancient times. And if you read that book and it's from an engineer, it's pretty hard to say it wasn't. So I'm not saying it was, but I want listeners and people like this to look at these things for themselves, because it will change the way you see your own life and it will change the way in which you believe that you can live your life and make a tremendous difference to your own in. In my mind, it helps you believe that you can do anything, you can be anything, you can achieve anything, because there are so many people that haven't had the opportunities to do that, but they've made it work somehow. And I believe in studying the past, and it's not history, it's wisdom. And history is part of it, that's a fun part, but it's studying the wisdom of the past opens the mind to what's possible for you and I.
Yeah. You know what I like and I find really fascinating and amazing is that when I look at history and I think about wisdom, I focus on Greek wisdom, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates. And one thing that I know that I have seen in my studies is that when the Roman Empire took over from the Greek Empire after the demise of Alexander the Great, and he was just 32 years of age when he died. One thing that the Roman Empire preserved was the libraries of the Greek Empire that held all the information with regards to life, philosophies, their beliefs, and many of those things we don't realize it are still affecting our civilization today. They felt it was important to preserve those things because they saw value in them. And so I get what you're trying to do here, Mike, with regards to the writing and that sense of awakening that you want people to get with regards to the wisdom that we have ignored that could help us so much in what we are currently doing in the world today. So you have had, 13 albums, Mike, with regards to music?
I have, yep. And I'm working on one right at the moment. I'm writing some songs with one of my friends who I played in a band with going back almost 40 years ago. So, and we're going to be releasing a new album from that band in 2026. So yeah. On our Facebook Messenger, we're sending back ideas. What do you think of this riff? What do you think of that song, et cetera, et cetera? So it's a lot of fun.
Wow, I love it. You know, I was very impressed by Air Supply when they came on the music scene. I mean, it was an amazing time that they had. Not quite like the Bee Gees, of course, and I'm looking at Australian origin here, and I know you appreciate that. But what type of, what is your main genre when it comes to music?
I played in a rock band, and I wore zebra skin tights in the 80s with bandanas and long hair.
Wow.
And I love all sorts of music. I'm not big on country music, to be quite honest with you. But I love rap, I love soul, I love R&B, I like hip-hop, you know, and I like rock, but rock's probably my favorite. And I like classical music as well, but, you know, I'm a guitar player, so there's nothing better for me than loud guitars, a big stage, and, you know, a lot of noise and jumping around.
All right, I hear you. Everybody's entitled to their own niche. I love
it. And you, Andy?
Oh, for me, it's rhythm and blues.
Nice. Who's your favorite artist?
Oh, my favorite artist at the top of my head is really Stevie Wonder.
And you can't get better.
The reason why I choose Stevie Wonder is because of the music that he puts out, as it is aligned with the lyrics that he puts out. And he keeps it really real. And I find that he kind of transcends many generations with his music. One song that comes to mind, Isn't She Lovely? Speaking about you, both of a daughter that has been born and come into the world. And people could identify with that. You know, he's just keeping it so real. Or Happy Birthday to You. Everybody could identify with that. You are the sunshine of my life. Stuff like that. So, yeah, it's all good. But for me, and that's my choice. That's my choice.
And he was a wonderful person, a wonderful example of somebody who tapped into the essence of who they are.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he didn't have the sight, so he was missing one of his senses. But did he make mistakes? You never heard him make a mistake. He was like the most profound musician. I mean, Beethoven was deaf, so and yet he wrote the most brilliant scores. So,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of like, okay, so Stevie Wonder's blind. What's your excuse, you know? So none of us have any excuses. We can all do what we want to do. It's only a mind that holds us back.
That's right. I love that. That's so true. So how do you incorporate your speaking ability into the work that you actually do? And I see you have made some tremendous strides with regards to speaking. What part of your strength do you incorporate into speaking as it relates to the work that you are currently doing, Mike?
Well, I guess I'd call it two things, Andy, possibly three. So if you looked at, if you heard me speak, for instance, then you'll say, Mike talks about leadership, conscious leadership. So conscious leadership, by definition, is not wanting to save the world, but is the human being's preparedness to do the deep inner work inside themselves so that they can turn up as the best and most authentic version of themselves. Right. So that would be one thing. Then coupled with a knowledge of business, so I'm always finding myself talking business, entrepreneurship, something to do. So there'll be a business topic in there somewhere. And the third thing is ancient wisdom. So it's about personal leadership, making the world a better place, focusing on an area of business and bringing in something that's esoteric or ancient to add the spice and get to people to think bigger than they would normally think.
Yeah. So you were
right before. I was speaking in Zambia last year with my wife and speaking at the Society of Accountants, the Zambian Society of Accountants, wonderful, wonderful group of people, about 200 of them at Vic Falls. And I started the first 10 minutes, I told the story of Alexander the Great.
Right. Yeah.
From how he started to his strategy to beat Darius on the battlefield of Isthmus, right through to how he declined in his last year to the point whereby he became not conscious. So, you know, it's just so lovely to be able to share some of these stories, because We can all be Alexander the Great, but in the end, he wasn't great.
Yeah. It's a really sad story of historical proportions, and there's so many lessons we can learn from Alexander, because I remember one of his most famous quote. It said that the world was not sufficient for him who now a tomb suffices. And what that reminds me of is that you can conquer so many things that exist in the world from a carnal perspective, whatever it might be. But if you didn't come to terms with yourself as an individual and you didn't get any kind of fulfillment and align yourself with innate virtual values that are so much more valuable, then what did you really conquer?
Absolutely.
What did you really gain? You know, so yeah. Wow. When I look at your information, Mike, I realize that you work with a lot of people who are in leadership positions and who are involved in business. What are some of the challenges that they are faced with that you address? Maybe from a talking point of view, or maybe from a coaching point of view?
I think the two biggest ones today, Andy, is like I'm talking post-COVID world, etc. One of them is overwhelm. So it's the story I was telling you before. They're just so much busier than anybody I saw when I was in my 20s growing up, and anybody I knew who I was related to who's long since dead and gone. They're just so much busier. People are under a lot of stress, and it's just getting worse today. So just clearing their mind, getting them focused, decluttering, simple things are really relevant. And I think the second one is people feel like imposters. And you can be, I'm sure Elon Musk, Richard Branson, and all those guys have been through this as well. I mean, people just look at them and go, oh, wow, they're so good. They've made so much money. They've been such great leaders, whatever. But once you start working with people who are at those types of levels, you start to realize that they wonder how they got there too. They wonder how they're going to stay there. They don't feel that it's real for them. They're scared of letting everybody down. You know, it's a fascinating thing. And so Lundy, my wife and I, we work with a lot of award-winning leaders, because after they've won big awards, they sort of go, I didn't deserve that award. What's next? I hope I don't self-destruct. And they can actually self-destruct at that point in time. So they're probably the two biggest things.
Wow. I love it. It seems as though you spend a lot of time, Mike, working with the wife. How important is that for you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we are together 24/7, 365. In fact, I could almost reach over and touch her right now. So she's doing some other things, but she's listening intently to this. And so absolutely, I mean, for us, one and one equals 11. So we've always been that way. Everybody who knows us knows that we're that way. We love to do everything together. We love to experience life together. It's just so much more fun.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for sharing, Mike. What is your vision for the future with regards to what you have done? And I know that you seem to be an individual that has no limitations as to what you can accomplish. What does the future look like for Mike Hancock?
Well, I think the future for me is to just do more of what we're doing. We have a specific target in terms of conscious leaders that we want to, let's call it, initiate and introduce to the world. And they can be from all sorts of fields. They can be musicians, sports people, business leaders, it doesn't matter to us, community leaders, anything like that, religious leaders, any religion, doesn't matter. So for us, we really try and show those people that the world needs their message and help them reinforce the positivity of what they're doing to others. So we have sort of yardsticks that we monitor internally to make sure that working with at least this many leaders each year, not too many, because then it gets diluted. But, you know, we try and work with about 20 to 25 each year. So, you know, we've been doing this for about 20 years now. We didn't have those numbers in mind. We're about 10 years into that. We're probably around the 300 leaders at the moment. So, and I'm talking true leaders, people who are very, very known in what they're doing and very diversified. I'll give you an example. So one of our clients and really good friends, because they're all friends of ours, she's in Malaysia, and you know, she's been named as one of the top 50 educators in the world for 7 years in a row. She was invited by Queen Elizabeth to go and meet just before Queen Elizabeth died. Yeah. So we go from her to, you mentioned the Clinton Global Initiative. Well, I'm associated with them through one of my best friends and a person who I see as my second mother. She's in India. She's 70. And, I mean, she's won a Global Peace Award for her work in India. And her association's part of the Clinton Global Initiative. And then, you know, we worked with somebody who, a DJ from Cape Town, who had an idea how to clean up the oceans of the world. And now his company's listed on the NASDAQ, and he lives in Rotterdam and running an amazing company that's won so many international environmental tech awards. So, you know, it's all these sort of people that we love to work with, but it can be anybody with an idea to make the world a better place. So for us, it's more of that. I don't think we'll ever stop doing that, you know, although age and time will make us do it in different ways and maybe in not have the same one-to-one personal touch that we do today, because we're in a lot of countries every year. And next month we're going to have five different countries working. So that's been our life, and that's what we love to do.
Yeah, sounds like fun to me.
It is.
Oh, yeah. So, Mike, you produced and directed a film called Dreamcatchers in 2010. Tell us about that. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was a fantastic experience. And it was so nice, because I had so many people in the film industry tell me, you actually did a really good job of directing it. So that was surprising for me, because I wasn't expecting that. So that was a lovely personal thing. I met a wonderful guy who's from Palm Springs on a cruise. Actually, I did a cruise with Wayne Dyer and the Hay House people. And I met this guy here. He's a psychic, and he trains a lot of the psychics that you see on TV. And he became a friend of mine. He died some years ago, but he became a friend of mine. I said, give me a reading on my film. How good's it going to do? And he said, well, it's not going to make you any money, he said, but it's going to do more for you than you ever believed. And he was 100% right. So Dreamcatchers was really about the transformation that was happening globally in 2012. It was the Mayan prophecies, and you may have read about it. It wasn't about the end of the world. It was about the end of the world that we knew.
Yeah.
The birth of true consciousness, which literally I've seen on the planet really happening. I mean, it's a household word now, whereas when we were talking consciousness 15 or 18 years ago, people were like, you are weird. But now it's a household word. So that's what the film was about. There was a lot of ancient wisdom in parts of it. And it was featuring nine ordinary people who were doing extraordinary things. So that was a lovely project to be involved with. And in 2020, just before the pandemic hit, we started working on a second film, which currently is on the shelf, but maybe in 2025 we'll pull it off. We've certainly been thinking of dusting it off and starting on it again, but we're going to have to start from scratch again, just because the footage we shot then is already 4 years old now, and we don't have time to work with it yet. And I want to release something that's current, but that film's going to be called Harmony, and it's about how we can bring in natural harmony again on the planet, because it's been missing. And my research into where it started missing goes right back to 1936, which it's not something we should talk about on your show, because it's really deep. It's not deep. It's really deep, and it'll take a lot. But the concept behind it is to show people how to introduce natural harmony into life. And when you have natural harmony, you're in better flow, cash flow, flow of the universe, things like doors open for you more, et cetera, et cetera. And I really do believe that, you know, all this fake news and, you know, this cancel culture, the stuff that we've got going on in the world now, is part of a premise that we've got into, the world got into, which is causing disharmony. So the film is really going to be about how to return to harmony. And so that's something we definitely want to do over the next few years. And we also have a script that we've shopped around. It's been with everybody from Martin Scorsese to some other great Hollywood people, which is a script based on the Bhagavad Gita and some of the messages in that sacred text as well. And definitely we've had people in India who want to put it together and turn it into a film there. But I think we really wanted to film it outside of India because it's an Indian story, so we wanted to get another perspective on it. We may film it in Africa yet and do an African version of it, which would be fun.
Yeah, sounds like something to look forward to, Mike. Really excited. Thank you.
Yeah, you got to fit all this stuff in, though, Andy. That's the thing.
So how do leaders really find a way to make a positive impact in the world? And I know we have challenges. We have so many things happening, not to mention the wars and the rumors of wars and the displacement of so many people with regards to having a stable and a foundational home. But in the business world, there are other things that are happening, socioeconomic issues, in terms of the up and down swing of the economy. Nothing seems to be really consistent for any long period of time, Mike. What would be your best advice to business leaders that they can create a positive impact and do something that would maintain some level of stability in their business world?
Well, that's a great question again. I think a couple of insights there would be to look at their roles differently. And you know, I think when I talk to the average CEO these days, they talk about shareholder value, retained earnings, and other things, right? In fact, Lundy and I spoke for one of the biggest companies in Africa. They're a huge company at their management conference in 2022, I think it was. And they'd won major international awards for what they do with their staff and how good they are to their staff. And we left that saying, we can't work with these people ever again, because in a whole day of sitting in their conference room, they didn't mention people once. So I think the first thing is, as a leader, to understand that you are a custodian of the future. I didn't make that up. That was told to me by a CEO I worked for in the 1990s. He said, I'm not a CEO, I'm a custodian of the future. I thought that was just so beautiful. So it's about balancing shareholder return and all those other things that we'll let accountants worry about, with the fact that you want the company to survive and thrive and to be seen socially as being a vibrant, well-meaning company that is a great place to work. And if you're a chosen place to work, and in many countries now have employer of choice awards and things like that. But if you're a chosen place to work, if you're doing something that is environmentally and socially good, and then you, as far as I'm concerned, you make as much profit as you want. And I'm not against profit. So, but if profit is at the expense of that, then as a leader, I'm afraid that when you enter your last days on this planet and you realize that there's something bigger than being a CEO of XYZ company, that when you go to the other side, you're going to have a lot of answering to do. And you may even have to come back and do this all over again until you learn, right? So, you know, I really think that my message to any CEO that's sitting there listening to this is, you don't have a choice. You have to create balance and a holistic approach that means that your company helps people, helps the planet, helps the greater good, and of course helps your shareholders to profit. If any one of those is out of balance, you've got problems. If you're just profit focused, you personally have a problem.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Mike. I think that's a wonderful note in which to bring this wonderful episode to an end. And I want to now share something on the screen, Mike, but I want you to tell people how they can best make contact with you if they want to get your music, if they want to get your books, if they want to get access to the ancient wisdom that you share, or they want you for a keynote speaking gig. Let them know.
You can just reach out to me on the website, which is the top one there. Anybody who is online and just goes to the website and hits the contact form, it actually comes straight to me. It doesn't go through a filter. So you can do that. You'll get straight to me and I will reply to you. I don't get 10,000 people on the website. And, you know, unless you're a A-list celebrity, you don't, even if you're a big CEO or something like that. So everybody has the time to reply to several dozen people or something. So happy to do that. And thank you for putting up the rest of them. We've got some great videos for business people on YouTube. And there's also Amazon where you can go and check out some books. But Andy, thanks so much for you and your big heart and the way in which you've asked such amazing questions today. May your show be blessed and may you be blessed in the future. And I just want to thank you and thank everybody who's listening and wish them all the best as well.
I receive that with humility and thanksgiving from your lips to God's ears. Thank you so much. You have been an inspirational and informative guest, Mike, and you have shared a whole lot of beautiful wisdom and nuggets, valuable nuggets with our people. So until next time, this is Andy of Andy's Personal Development together with my guest, Mike Hancock. The episode was entitled Ancient Wisdom Solves Most Modern Issues. We say to you, remember the three watchwords, health, happiness, and prosperity. God bless. Shalom.